Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Angie's List is now Angie, and we've heard a lot of theories about why.
I thought it was an eco move. Fewer words, less paper.
No, it was so you could say it faster.
No, it's to be more iconic.
Must be a tech thing.
But those aren't quite right. It's because now you can compare upfront prices, book a service instantly, and even get your project handled from start to finish.
Sounds easy.
It is, and it makes us so much more than just a list. Get started at Angie.com. That's A-N-G-I. Or download the app today.
Hey, I'm Cam from Spell, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, I'm Graham McDee, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is Lester from Spell, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
You're listening to the Talking Metal Podcast with your host, Mark Striegel, and special guest co-host, Victor M. Ruiz. iTunes' number one hard rock and metal podcast. I'm Bud Friendly. Now, here are your hosts, Mark and Victor.
Welcome, one and all, once again to another episode of Talking Metal Live. We have Mark Striegel all the way over in New Jersey, and we have myself, Victor Ruiz, here in Spain.
Victor Ruiz from Mars Attacks, guys. Definitely, if you don't subscribe to that podcast, you should. Mars Attacks, part of the Talking Metal Digital Podcasting Network.
Absolutely. We have a lot of great shows on Talking Metal Digital. Obviously, Mark just helped pimp my show there for a second. Had some fun doing some work with Miss LaFon recently on a few different episodes. I know you've
like
been working.
You clarified the pronunciation of his name, because it's something, I mean, he basically told you on that one episode that you can say Mitch LaFon, which I've been trying so hard to get that, you know, French Montreal Canadian LaFon, you know, been trying so hard to say it like that. And now I feel like I don't have to try that hard.
Right, I hear you. It was funny because one of the first times that I spoke to him, being a lifelong hockey fan, I'm thinking, okay, well, how would his name be pronounced in French Canadian because of all the long line of, you know, French Canadian players? I started thinking of Guy Lafleur, you know, similar to what you're saying, you know. How do you say it? So I wanted to get that out of the way because obviously it's uncomfortable to be pronouncing someone's name incorrectly, you know, even after they tell you it's pronounced a certain way.
Yeah, that's my microwave going off in the background with my frozen burrito. It's after 9 o'clock here on the East Coast. I still haven't eaten dinner. It's just been one of those days. But before I eat my burrito and do an episode of Talking Metal, I gotta crack this beer open. So, Victor, you're not drinking beer anymore?
I can't drink any alcohol. I can only drink water. I can drink Gatorade, and I can drink Coke from time to time. But even that messes me up sometimes. I mean, I've been told just to try to drink the occasional Coke, which, I mean, I don't frequently drink soft drinks, but was told by my doctor that if my stomach was bothering me, that it is a good way to combat different issues that I've had. I have been doing better than I have been in a long while.
Good.
I've been feeling this week, so I was happy to hear that we were going to be doing the show this week. So it's almost like the cherry on top, you know, a good, nice, long week of you know, being good and, you know, catching up with you.
Yeah, it's definitely, I like doing the Friday's shows. I mean, I had a fucking shit-ass day at work. I fucked something up, basically, and you know, I'm trying hard to impress these people because I don't work there for real. I'm not a staff employee. I'm a freelance contractor. And, you know, my time's up at the end of the month, and I want to kind of hope I get more work from them. And I did a big fuck up, so I'm fucking just pissed about that. You know, my wife's doing this play, which is great. I'm glad she's doing it. But, you know, when I come home from work, it's right to baths for the kids and, you know, and stories and snacks and blah, blah, blah. And then I'm running around getting set up for this, which I wish we could start it earlier because I know it's so late for you. But the 9 o'clock is about how things go over here. And then I think I've just been hung over all day, too, because I went out with Josh Bernstein last night. He just moved to Maplewood. He is the former creative director, editor of Revolver magazine.
And,
he had a couple of his neighbors with him. We hit the local pub in Maplewood and talked to Metal, basically. I should have had a microphone going because he was definitely dishing some good stories about his time at Revolver and some of the I heard some crazy stuff, actually, about really big name stars who go around preaching that they're sober, and Josh telling me that as early as 2 years ago, you know, the one guy, and I'm talking to a massive heavy metal star who goes around telling people he's sober, was drinking and smoking weed in the presence of, you know, the staff, the Revolver staff.
Sounds so.
Yeah, what's that?
It sounds like he was sober, yeah.
Yeah, apparently he doesn't do heroin anymore, so he thinks he's sober. But apparently he still smokes. I'm not going to mention his name, but he still smokes weed and drinks kamikazes. So there you go. And I'd heard a rumor that he got drunk once with Angela from Arch Enemy about 5-6 years ago on red wine. So it's just kind of funny that he goes around with this persona being the sober guy, you know, because apparently he's not. And again, I don't want to mention any names, but most people could probably figure it out by this point.
I was going to see if I could pan my camera to a box set that I have on top of my CDs here, but I see that it's covered up by something else. I think by something by his former band. So,
all right. Sounds like you're on the right track there.
Anyway, so what's on tap?
We got a band called Spell that's going to be dialing in just a few minutes, and I don't know anything about this band except I know one thing about them, and they're fucking good, man. They are old school, like new wave of British heavy metal sounding rock and roll, and they're 2014. They're out of Canada. We're going to find out more about them. I don't really know anything about the guys in the band. I don't know, you know, how they are able to recreate this authentic, dirty, rough new wave of British heavy metal sound, you know, 30 some years later in Canada, but they're doing it. So I am very excited to talk with them. Do a brief interview with them, and even more excited to play some more of their music for you guys. I played one of their tracks on, I think it was episode 470. I played one of their tracks, so we'll get another one into you guys tonight.
Very cool. I was just reading a few minutes ago while I was doing the pre-show, per se. Was reading that Doug Aldridge had left Whitesnake.
Really?
Dio for Whitesnake, sort of saying that that was his favorite band of all time, and found it sort of a strange story, I guess, from what Coverdale posted on Twitter. He's leaving to do solo work. But, I mean, he's done everything from Lady Gaga in the last year to his own band. Now I forget the name of the band. Is it Burning Rain, perhaps?
It sounds right. I'm not sure, though.
Right. And just interesting that, I mean, I would think that, I mean, although Whitesnake isn't huge, if you leave something like Dio, and I understand Dio isn't around anymore, but if you leave Dio for Whitesnake, I'd think that would be like the last job you'd look for. But who knows? I mean, who knows what goes on behind the scenes?
Yeah, Burning Rain. I'm on I'm on Wikipedia right now. Burning Rain. Yes. Who played guitar for Dio? Like, I saw Dio like in 96. And the guy who was playing with him at that time was not like a real crazy shredder. He was more like just a kind of straight ahead rock guy. At least that was the vibe I remember from the concert. This is I want to say it was Motorhead, Dio, Maiden at Roseland. I'm not sure about that, but I think that was who it was. I'm trying to.
Who was the drummer?
The drummer? I don't know. I'm not sure. I can't remember.
I mean, his guitarists were.
It may have been Vinny Appice. I'm not sure.
If it was Vinny Appice, then it was Tracy G. Long black hair. The guitarist had a Strat.
I don't know. I mean, I know who Tracy G was, and I feel like that wasn't him, but it could have been.
Right.
I'll need to figure that out. I don't know. He almost seemed like kind of a no-name guy. I don't know.
Because the guys that he's had Vivian, he's had Craig Goldie, he's had Rowan Robertson, then Tracy G and Doug Aldridge. Those are the guys that he played with officially.
And he never had anybody else on tour with him?
Not to my knowledge.
I mean, obviously, Craig Goldie came back in the fold much later, but...
Right.
Huh, I don't know. I need to research that. Anyways, not a big deal right now. What's the plan before we get Spell on the line, Victor? Are we going to... And we hope we're going to get him on the line, being that this is recorded live. A lot of you guys are listening to it in podcast form, but it is a live show here on... What's the day today? The 9th? May 9th?
Yes, the 9th.
The 9th. It is a live show here at 9 p.m. on the East Coast. So we are hoping we will have Spell calling in 4 minutes. That's the plan. But again, live shows, slight disclaimer, you never know what's going to happen. So, and I did send them an email today and never heard back, which is why I'm giving the disclaimer. But do you have a song you want to play before we dial them up, Victor?
We could do that. Sure. I heard this a few weeks ago and really thought it was cool. And as I was working at my new house today, sweeping up a storm, I put this on to listen to the entire album, and I really liked it. The name of the band is California Breed. This is the new project that Glenn Hughes and Jason Bonham have put together. I unfortunately don't know the name of the guitarist. It's a three-piece, and I was actually impressed because I thought that with the previous band, the what was that, Country Communion, or what was the name of that?
Yeah.
I thought the songs were either hit or miss. They were either really good or just very bland.
Yeah, I like that last record they put out. I mean, Martin Popoff, I think, called it his favorite record of last year, I think. But so some people did like it. I heard other people say they didn't. But I'm with you. I'm with you. It was hit or miss for me, too.
Yeah, it seemed like there was almost too much talent, and it just wasn't coming out. It's similar to my whole interpretation of Chickenfoot. But anyway... Right. This is California Breed. I think it's really cool. The whole entire album, at least in my opinion, is very strong. And before I get into the track, the one thing that I was sort of going back and forth with on Facebook not too long ago, it's funny how a band like Kingdom Come caught so much crap in the 80s for sounding so much like Zeppelin. And now you have so many bands that sound like Zeppelin. And they don't get that same sort of flack.
Yeah,
so.
But you know what I will say? That remember Bonham? And I think I mentioned this on the recent right. Talking Rock episode. Robert Plant, for whatever reason, like when he was calling Whitesnake, you know, David cover version, and he called Kingdom Come, Kingdom Clone, you know, he gave Bonham, the band I'm talking about, that record with the Disregards for Timekeeping or whatever it was, Bob Ezrin produced it. He gave them a pass, and I think that was pretty much because, you know, his good friend's son and his friend, Jason Bonham, was the leader of that band.
Right.
So I wouldn't be surprised if this band gets a pass because of Jason Bonham.
Right.
At least okay, a pass from Plant, you know.
Right. Okay, so let's check out Sweet Tea here by California Breed.
Nice.
Oh,
Hey guys, what you just heard was Spell. The name of that song is Possessed by Heavy Metal. Great, great band. And I highly recommend you guys seeking them out on Facebook and liking them and getting the CD when it's released. I was sent a download leak, so I'm not even sure if the album is out yet. But great stuff. And we were supposed to do an interview with them at 9:15 Eastern Standard Time tonight. And Victor sent them a friend request on Skype earlier today, getting them to add him as a contact. They never responded. And here we are, 9:22, and no sign of them. So I guess they're lost, because, you know, when you get on Talking Metal, you definitely reach at least a couple thousand listeners, usually a lot more than that, actually. So too bad.
That often makes me wonder if some of these artists realize that the amount of people that are listening to them on a podcast is probably more than, you know, the amount of sales they have for an album.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know who gets a freaking shitload of downloads? This guy, Mitch. Mitch on Talking Metal Digital, one-on-one podcast, as we mentioned earlier, gets a ton of downloads. That Stephen Piercy episode he had just in like 12,000 downloads at this point, you know, and even the Toby Wright interview, which I threw up on a Saturday thinking it was going to be a throwaway. I mean, that's like well over 5,000, or like 4 days in, it was at 5,000. So I haven't checked in at this point, but yeah. So it's great. And it's an honor to have the one and only Mitch LaFon on Talking Metal Digital with us. Check his podcast out. Check Victor's podcast out. And while I have your attention, guys, hopefully I have your attention through the whole show. What I'm trying to say is I'm going to break away just for a minute to let you know that we work with this company called The Midroll, and they provide advertisements to podcasters. A lot of the biggies, too. Mark Maron goes through The Midroll, I believe. Comedy Bang Bang. A lot of the real big ones. But listeners, help Talking Metal stay free to download by completing this short anonymous survey. It will take no more than 5 minutes of your time. Your answers will help match our shows with advertisers that best fit the sensibility of our podcast and its listeners, like you. Listeners who complete the survey will be entered in an ongoing monthly raffle to win a $100 Amazon gift card. We promise not to share or sell your email address. We won't send you emails unless you win. Please go to www.podsurvey.com/metal. This place will, again, help us. It'll help you guys in entering this contest. It's a win-win situation. So, again, go to www.podsurvey.com/metal. to take our survey and get a chance to win a $100 Amazon gift card from The Midroll and Talking Metal. Thanks a lot, guys. All right, so no Spell. They still haven't reached out and tried to Skype you, Victor?
They actually just did. They just mentioned that they're getting everyone positioned, that they'll call us in a second.
It's like, it's kind of annoying, but okay.
Yes. All right. It is without a
doubt. So, what else is going on? You had a few things you wanted to talk about.
Yeah, I found it interesting when we were talking a little bit about the whole Zeppelin connection there for a second. Every so many months, we talk about Robert Plant and his stupid comments. I mean, is there any other way of, you know, addressing them? I mean, I don't know. I just read his whole comment about, well, the reason that there wasn't a Led Zeppelin reunion is because he didn't want a jukebox.
Yeah. Oh, so, but he goes out and he plays all the Zeppelin songs solo, you know, so not all of them, but a good chunk of them. Here's the deal. He's being polite, and I think he's protecting his friends, Jimmy Page specifically, and I think he's also, you know, protecting the legacy. And for 30 years, ever since I was like literally 11 years old, I longed for a Zeppelin reunion with Jason Bonham, Tony Thompson, whoever the hell was going to be on drums. It didn't make that big of a difference to me. no disrespect towards Jason Bonham. But after that, How the West, what was the DVD? Celebration Day DVD came out, and you and I have devoted podcasts to this already. But I have to say that it was a little tough for me to watch, and I felt like his playing was just, Jimmy's specifically, just lacked the intensity and technique that he once had. And, you know, Plant didn't quite hit the notes like he used to, although he was in tune. You know, whether that was overdubbed or whatever is a whole nother conversation. But he sounded all right. I just felt like, I don't know, I felt like that made me think, you know, for the first time in a long, long time, that, hey, maybe it's better to leave the legacy at what it was, you know, and not mess with it and leave that memory. You know, it's like, you know, Marilyn Monroe would have gotten old, and maybe she would have gotten fat and not as attractive, but because she died so young, she's eternally beautiful to us all, and sexy and vibrant, you know, and maybe there's something for leaving Zeppelin in the past. I mean, they revisited it here and there, and I don't know. I almost feel like for the, you know, within the last year or two, I've for the first time kind of been like, okay, maybe Plant is right, you know. But I think him saying he wants to just, he didn't want to be a human jukebox. I mean, listen, there was what, 300 million on the table or something. It's like I think he just realized that he didn't want to tarnish the legacy or something. I don't know, but maybe he's smarter than we think, you know.
Could be. I mean, my only response to that is, I mean, I would hope that if they would do a string of tours, the band would sound better, at least Jimmy's playing, than just a one-off maybe. I mean, there's like a million things that could have, you know, everyone has a bad day, you know, maybe his playing was off that day or whatever. And after so many years of not playing in front of all those people, maybe that came into play. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah, who knows?
But
what's going on with Spell? Are they contacting us?
I don't know. The guy told me about 7 minutes ago that they're getting ready. I mean, they're supposed to be ready 15 minutes ago.
Right. All right. So it's sorry, Spell. It's just kind of, it's a little bit annoying. We're doing a live show here. Maybe they don't freaking realize it's live. But even if it wasn't live, my life has gotten between work, you know. I don't know if you guys know this. I actually put together all of Mitch's podcasts, you know, not all of them because Victor's done two of them. But, you know, there's a lot of behind the work stuff that goes on Mitch's podcast, which I love doing because I'm glad to have him on Talking Metal Digital. But it's just like between work, podcasting, the kids, it's like I feel like my time is so freaking valuable that when people screw me on 15 minutes or something, I tend to get a little annoyed. But anyways, what about Ozzy? You had emailed me earlier about an Ozzy Osbourne topic that we could cover, which I think is kind of interesting.
Yeah, it was interesting. I interviewed Monty Pittman earlier this week. For those that don't know who Monty is, he was in the band Prong, and he's actually Madonna's guitarist. He taught her how to play. He, as the story's been mentioned plenty of times online, he taught Guy Ritchie how to play, and then he explains during the interview how she basically brought him into the fold and how he's been with her ever since.
He was giving Guy Ritchie lessons back when Guy and Madonna were together, and then he got into Madonna's band that way?
Yes.
Really? Oh, that's interesting. Wow.
What basically happened was he started giving Guy lessons. She had bought him a guitar. He was working at the Guitar Center in Hollywood. He started giving him lessons. And 3 days later, Madonna said, I want you to give me lessons. And what happened was she basically explained to him that she couldn't hang around Hollywood, that he would have to come out on tour with her. And he was giving her 3 to 4 lessons a week. And little by little, that escalated into him appearing on Letterman with her. And then from there, he was in her band. And he goes into detail on how, you know, being part of her band is more like being part of her family and this and that. And I don't know. I found it very interesting. One of the things that I asked him and that I ask a lot of other people is, if you ever had a chance to either put a bill together where your band is playing with a current band and one that no longer exists, who would they be? And in Monty's case, he's worked with all types of artists from, as I mentioned, Prong, Madonna, members of the Spice Girls, actually Spell's calling in.
Okay.
I guess I should pick this up.
Well, finish your thought.
So anyway, he basically, or what I asked him was, who should, or who would he like to play with, or who would he like to record with that he hasn't recorded with in the past? And he starts to tell me how he actually went to Dolores Rhodes School and how he's very friendly with Randy Rhodes' brother, Kelly Rhodes.
Right.
And how Kelly's played piano on some of his acoustic work. And he basically says, you know, that Kelly has this like musical mind similar to how Randy had and how he thinks about music in the same way. And that he basically answered that the person that he would love to work with would be Ozzy if he could get Kelly involved to help with the whole songwriting and everything else, that he feels that they could put something out very similar to the first two Ozzy albums.
Right.
So I found it to be very interesting that he would bring that up. And at the same time, I started thinking, well, what makes sense for Ozzy? Would it make sense for them to try another Sabbath? Or would it make sense for him to now come back to Gus G and his solo band?
Well, I tell you what, let's hold that thought, because I definitely have some things to add to that, because it's a really interesting thing to talk about. Mitch and I spoke about it a little bit on one of those one-on-one episodes. But are the Spell guys on the line now?
I have to call them, actually.
Okay. Why don't you just dial them in?
Okay.
All right.
On the line, joining us all the way from the Great White North, the band Spell.
Hey, guys. How are you?
Pretty good.
Doing awesome.
Yeah. Cool. So who do we have here? We have Lester, Graham, and Cam?
Yep.
Yeah.
Excellent. Guys, the download link that was sent to me, I get a ton of download links, and sometimes I have to admit I don't even bother downloading them. But when I read the description of you guys, it sounded kind of interesting, but I was still skeptical. But when I heard the music, man, you guys got it going on. It's some really good shit you guys are doing, and I'm very impressed, and I want to just take this time to kind of introduce you guys to the Talking Metal listeners and learn a little bit about you guys. Because I honestly don't know anything about Spell except that you guys have some really good music. So tell me a little bit about you guys. Where are you from and how long have you been together as a band?
Well, we're from Vancouver, BC, Canada. And we've been jamming together since about 2007. And we've been playing heavy metal since then. And we're just sort of more recently starting to expand our sound a bunch, and we had a fairly recent name change. We used to be called Striker, now we're called Spell. And we just put out our first record, The Full Moon Sessions, with Hard and Heavy Records out of Toronto. And we're just about to embark on our first major tour across Canada, and we're stoked to see what we can do after that.
Cool. And who is this talking right now? Is this Cam?
I'm Cam, yeah.
Yeah. So Cam, now you're the bassist, and you also do most of the vocals?
Correct.
Cool. And then, Graham, what do you play?
I play guitar.
Okay, and that leaves Lester as the drummer, right?
Me, yeah.
Cool. So I guess I'm like an older dude, you know, and I was a really young kid when the new wave of British heavy metal movement actually happened. And I have to kind of compare that sound that came out of Britain in 1979 through like 1982 to what you guys are doing. You almost sound like you could be a part of that movement. And so it made me wonder, like, how old are you guys? Are you guys younger guys? Are you older guys who are kind of, you know, experienced that sound when it came out? Like,
all in our 20s.
Okay, so that's younger.
None of us were alive when the era of British heavy metal was happening.
Right.
But Cam and myself are brothers, so when we were first getting into music and learning to play guitar and bass and instruments and things, kind of our main drive to do that was probably our influence from bands of the new wave British heavy metal, like obviously Iron Maiden and Judas Priest and other bands. But so that's probably why that's an intrinsic part of our sound.
And how did you get into those bands? Was it like, did your parents listen to them or an older uncle or something?
Nothing like that. We kind of just discovered it on our own, really. At the local record shop.
Yeah.
Our parents didn't really listen to music at all throughout our childhood.
Yeah, not very much.
we just went down to the local record shop, and I remember one day just looking through CDs and records and picking up Iron Maiden Peace of Mind and just thinking, this looks awesome, and buying it really for no reason. And then, you know, that being a life-changing experience.
I brought Brave New World on that same day.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting that you guys bring that up, because way back when, before you had all the, you know, online outlets, that's how a lot of people actually bought albums, excuse me, was by seeing the album jacket and saying, wow, this looks really cool, you know, something like Peace of Mind or any of the Iron Maiden albums that Derek Riggs had done. Obviously, the sound, though, almost predates that even more. It's almost going more towards the Paul Di'Anno era of the band, where it's much rawer and fits, you know, perfectly into what Mark was describing.
Yeah, well, kind of as the whole thing about like finding cool music through album covers and stuff, that's still a really big important part of our sound. And we've actually kind of been going backwards in time in a way. We still spend a lot of our time at the record stores just picking up stuff we've never heard of before or seen, just because it looks cool or because it sounds cool. And so, you know, we started out with the Iron Maiden stuff, and then we've kind of been working our way back through the 80s and the 70s and 60s and just discovering as much cool stuff as we can find. And that's kind of why our sound's evolving.
Cool. And what's the scene like, the rock and metal scene like in Vancouver? Is there an actual scene that exists there?
There's a handful of great bands from here, and I think Vancouver's always had a number of kind of classic and influential bands, but the main problem I would say for the scene in the city is a lack of venues and a lot of red tape, like bylaws and liquor license laws that really shut down a lot of the up-and-coming venues and make it very difficult to put on metal shows and rock shows.
Okay.
So there's a pretty strong small scene, but
it's more of like you get the occasional like big bands like 3 Inches of Blood that come out of here and really take off, or you know, Bison,
right,
or even Blizzard or Ancients, but because it's so hard to get booked, it tends to be not a very good scene for sort of blossoming smaller bands. So you get a few of the big ones, but then, you know, it's not really very helpful for everyone else.
Right.
Although those bands are still.
And so how do you guys do it? Are you guys working day jobs or are you doing this full time?
Definitely not doing this full time. We're working all the time, man. Trying to get time off the tour.
Yeah, so that's you got to take time off and you go out and you tour, and there's probably not a lot of money to be made when you're on the road. Is that right?
Well, yeah, I feel like Vancouver is probably one of the worst cities in the world to tour from, second to Victoria, BC, because we can't go north because there's nothing to the north. We can't go south because it's impossible to get across the border without paying thousands of dollars in licensing and stuff.
Or sneaking across.
Wow. And if we want to go, east, of course we can't go west because there's an ocean. If we want to go east, which is the only direction, it's literally like thousands of miles between, you know, like the next place with an actual music scene is Toronto, which is, you know, what is that, like 4,500 miles across the continent?
Well, there's some other cities in Calgary and Edmonton. And
there's a few, but you know. It's not
there's a lot bigger distances between major cities. So touring across Canada is like kind of less feasible, less economical.
It's a guaranteed money pit. You're gonna lose more than you make.
Well, on that note, what is the best way for our listeners to support you guys?
I would say come out to our shows if we come to your city.
Yeah.
And if we're not coming to your city, then you can buy our LP and t-shirts from our Bandcamp. We have them up for sale.
Okay. It's all for sale. I strongly believe in free music, especially in the form of MP3s. You know, I buy vinyl when I can, but we've also got all of our music up for free on our Bandcamp. So like, please download it and like give it away to all your friends. That's the best way you can support us.
Yeah.
Right. Just spreading the word, right? And when you said LP, is there a vinyl version of the album?
Yeah. It's only on vinyl.
Exclusively on vinyl.
We're going to try to get it on CDs in the near future. But
we're pretty big vinyl junkies.
That's freaking awesome. It's exclusively on vinyl. So there's no CD version of it right now.
Not yet, anyhow.
That's a bold thing to do in 2014. good for you guys. The album is called The Full Moon Sessions. And again, the vinyl is available. We're going to have links up in today's show notes for you guys listening to the podcasting version of Talking Metal today at talkingmetal.com. And let's talk about the sound of the record. There's so many bands today, especially the metal bands, where they get this almost sample-like drum sound and everything's so crisp and clear that in a way it almost takes away from the heaviness of it when stuff is so defined and processed, if you will. You guys don't have that situation at all. You're the opposite, where the mix is and I mean this as a compliment, at times it's almost a little muddy and messy, and I love that because it adds to the chaos and the feel to it. How do you get that sound in the studio?
It's about being organic, really, and just like playing. A lot of it's like live off the floor, and like we don't go back and do lots of takes. We don't do punch-ins. There's not a lot of editing. It's like just organic recording. Just go in there and get it done. We already know what we want to do pretty much, and we just go in and have fun and play our instruments.
I think the goal for the recording process is maybe we want to have a sound that comes across as similar in the jam space on the recording and in the live setting, because really I think for your album it should be a fair representation of what you actually sound like as a band. So you know, with a lot of editing and triggering and going in and cleaning everything up so much, it'll turn out sounding like something other than how we sound.
A piece of plastic. Right. A piece of plastic, yeah.
If you sound good, you sound good. So. I don't know. What
other bands are you guys into, like more contemporary bands I'm talking about, not the old school stuff?
Yeah. There's some local bands we really like Mitochondrion, pretty cool death metal. There's Chains of Love, not really metal, but still cool. Funeral Circle is a cool doom metal band from here that we're going to be touring with in the summer. There's a really cool band called Redrick Sultan. They play some pretty bizarre prog rock. I've been doing some shows with those guys for about the past 10 years, and they're awesome. And then, of course, there's Ancients. So they just got nominated for a Juno, so they're kind of the big deal band coming out of Vancouver right now, doing some cool stuff. There's also, like, in terms of like heavy metal that we really like, we're really into the Sweden scene right now. There's some really cool bands coming out of there, like In Solitude and Tribulation.
Yeah, I love In Solitude. That's In Solitude record from last year is just really good.
Yeah. Amazing. Yeah, that's one of our favorite records right now for sure. Also like Portrait. There's Witch Hazel from England. There's cool stuff coming out in heavy metal all over the world right now. It's just the problem is that it's not in any sort of unified scene.
Right. Cool. Well, again, I think you guys are doing a good thing. I guess one more question from me, at least. The age bracket of your fan base, I'll tell you, I'm 44 years old, you know, so I'm a lot older than you guys, but I'm really relating to what you're doing. And I know there's other 40-something dudes out there who are going to dig this when they hear it too. However, what about the 20-somethings? Are they digging it? What about the teenagers? Are you getting fans of the of your that are your age and younger?
Well, we've got our first all ages show coming up in a couple weeks, so we'll find that out pretty soon. But but I mean, our local shows have been pretty good. You know, we're having a pretty good response. People are coming out, and I'm stoked about that. I think a lot of the, like, you know, 40-year-old guys and older, you know, as much as I hate to say it, tend to not come out as much as they might have done in the past when they were younger.
No, so, you know, it's true. I used to go to like 3 shows a week, and I go to like probably, you know, 2 or 3 a month now, and that's like, and I'm a rarity, you know, because I'm a music guy. Most of the other dads in the neighborhood aren't out at shows like I am. So you're right. The older crowd doesn't go to shows as much.
Although we've met a couple, we've met a couple older guys who really dug what we were doing, and we met one outside of the venue before one of our last shows, and described to him our sound, and he seemed interested, and ended up coming and headbanging and having a good time. So,
yeah. But I also think it's important that, you know, although we really like the old school bands like Priest and Maiden and Saxon and whatever else, it's really important to us that what we're trying to do is not just like a throwback thing. We believe that we're trying to do something new as well. You know, we're trying to bring something very different. You know, we've got a lot of broad influences. So, you know, we're not just playing like new wave of British heavy metal, like 80s heavy metal. You know, like I love, like, we've actually got a Fleetwood Mac cover on this record, and like I love like Janis Joplin and that sort of stuff too. So, you know, we're really trying to put something into play here that hasn't been done before.
I think that's important because there's, you know, a lot of bands which I'd call throwback bands that they are following the script that was written, you know, 30 years earlier, 35, maybe even 40 years earlier to a T, and they're not adding their own touch to it. They're not expanding the boundaries of it, and I think that's an important thing to strive for. And I get it. You know, I think you guys are definitely doing that too. So yeah, good stuff, guys. And I'm going to buy the LP. That's exciting. I've been listening to a lot of vinyl, not just metal. I've been buying like all sorts of stuff on vinyl, and there's a certain sound that the vinyl gets that you just don't get through the MP3s. So all you Talking Metal listeners should definitely go out and purchase Spell. The name of the band again is Spell. The name of the album is The Full Moon Sessions, and we're going to have links up to that in today's over to the album where you can purchase it in today's show notes. Guys, if we could get it like a Talking Metal ID, maybe one at a time would be best. Your name, your band, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
All right. Hey, I'm Cam from Spell, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
The next, Graham.
Hey, I'm Graham McDee, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Hey, this is Lester from Spell, and you're listening to Talking Metal.
Guys, thanks so much for taking the time to Skype us today. This will go up in podcast form on Tuesday, and I'll try to remember to send a link to your publicist. What was it? I'm trying to remember who the publicist was.
Catharsis PR.
Catharsis, yeah. I'll try to remember to send them a link.
Awesome.
Thanks a lot, gentlemen.
Thanks so much.
Okay, what other... So we played Possessed by Heavy Metal earlier. What song do you want to play to take us out here?
Electric Witchery.
Yeah.
Cool.
Excellent.
Electric Witchery.
All right, guys. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot, Talking Metal. Man.
Part of me wanted to ream him out for calling in late, but you know, I just really believe in the sound that they are projecting and what they're doing, so I kind of will let them off the hook for that. I'm still mad about this guy, Ethan Brosh. We showed up once to do an interview with this guy, Ethan Brosh, and blew us off in person. Better late than never for Spell, and I wish these guys the best of luck. If you are up in Canada, watch out for them playing live. There are some dates posted. I know they're going to be doing dates this summer. I think they have a date coming up in May, too. So if you're in Canada, Northwest Canada specifically, watch out for these guys.
Maybe Mitch will be able to see them.
Yeah, well, he's in Eastern. You know, he's Montreal. But I don't know. I actually have their tour dates here. Let me see if I can tell you. I'm not seeing any Montreal dates.
They have good stuff.
Winnipeg.
Like things like that in there.
Yeah, North Bay, London, Ontario. Oh, Toronto. Yeah, Toronto. I don't know. Maybe they will make it over to Montreal. I don't know. I'm playing Toronto.
London's close to Detroit, actually.
Is it? All right.
Yeah.
There you go. Cool. Great band, and they sound like good guys. So let's support Spell. We'll have their Facebook linked through today's show notes. Also, it's facebook.com/spellspell. And that record is coming out on Hard and Heavy. So we were talking about Ozzy before the yes. disjointed Spell talk and interview. And here's the deal. I don't know if Ozzy will do another solo record. I know Gus G thinks they are doing another album. I know Tommy Clefetis 2-3 years ago when he was on Talking Metal told me that they were already talking about and working on a solo record. But, you know, Mitch caught up with Ozzy, Mitch LaFon, on one of his one-on-one podcasts, and it was a press conference, and he got literally to ask Ozzy one question. And the way Ozzy answered it was, you know, I'm in Sabbath now. I'm not even thinking about doing that. And if things don't work out in Sabbath, maybe, but things are working out, and, you know, this is what I'm doing. And it almost had the ring to me that he may want to end his career with Sabbath. I suspect there could be another Sabbath record before there's another Ozzy solo record.
That's interesting, because before the whole Sabbath talk came up, there was all this talk about him writing with Gus G, and there were rumors, and actually someone that I had interviewed, and I don't remember who it was, I don't remember at the moment, but they had told me, you know, off air, hey, you know, Firewind is touring because Ozzy didn't feel like Gus G's material was up to par, and that's what Gus relayed to them, and that they pretty much said, hey, you know, take a year to come up with some other material. In the meantime, Ozzy's going to be doing the Sabbath stuff.
I find that hard to believe. I mean, it's very possible his material wasn't up to par. I don't know if that's the case, but the money that, you know, Sabbath had been away for a while, at least,
right.
You know, they were around in heaven and hell form, but, you know, up until whenever that was. But, you know, Sabbath with Ozzy had been away for a while. And I think there was, they finally got to the agreement where they were going to do a record, and they got Rick involved. And I would tend to think it was probably more than that, that they recognized that the time was ripe again for Sabbath, and they've done well. The tour sold extremely well. The album did well, you know. So I don't know if they'll bring Rick Rubin back, because I almost, you know, they didn't really trash him too much in interviews, but I almost sense that
they weren't happy.
They weren't happy, and you know, I think, I don't know. I think maybe they were happy with the outcome, but I do think there was a lot of direction given to them by Rick, and I'm not sure if those guys at this point in their career and in their life, for that matter,
take direction all that well, you know. This is a guess on my part,
right?
But the album turned out great. I mean, I heard Ozzy spent more time on vocals on this record than he spent in years
on right vocals. And the one thing that I was going to mention is that Ozzy sort of mentioned that Rick strong-armed them with bringing Brad Wilkes in, and pretty much saying that there was no reason that Tommy couldn't have recorded the album. And
yeah, there might be some truth to that. I don't know. I mean, I'd really have to study Tommy's playing, which, you know, if Rick Rubin put on a bunch of Rob Zombie records and thought, you know, this isn't the guy I want on the record, and he judged Tommy's playing strictly on Tommy's career with Rob Zombie, that was probably an unfair blow to Tommy. But if they went into the studio and for whatever reason Tommy just wasn't getting the swing, you know, I mean, that's what they wanted. They wanted a drummer with swing, you know, to talk musician, you know, to have that, like, you know, kind of, let's face it, Bill Ward, when he could play drums well, which was a long time ago, he had a real jazz swing about him, you know.
Right. But Tommy started out as a jazz drummer. That's why
I think Tommy got slighted on the whole thing. I think Tommy's a good guy, and I think for whatever reason, possibly because of his association with Rob Zombie, he had the cards stacked against him. You know, the deck. It was a bad. He was holding a bad hand going in there, and regardless of how good he played, it's possible that Rick Rubin already had, oh, he plays that electronic boom, boom, you know, like Rob Zombie type of beats.
Right. It's interesting. Would be the first band that would complain that Rick Rubin actually did show up to produce the album.
I think it meant a lot to Rick. I mean, he's a hardcore Sabbath fan, you know. Yeah, I've read the stories about Rick Nuts, you know, the Black Crowes stuff, and they hate him, don't they?
Slipknot, Corey Taylor's mentioned a million times how they felt that that they threw money away by, you know, hiring him and then having him not even show up.
The thing about Rick is this, that okay, that might be the case for some, maybe all the records the guy produces, but that name, when I see that name attached to a record, I don't care if it's the Dixie Chicks or Johnny Cash or Slipknot, right, or Black Sabbath or the Red Hot Chili Peppers or Rage Against the Machine. When I see that name attached to a record, I usually think, you know what? It's going to be pretty good. And it almost always is. You know, he even Lana Del Rey, he did that song Ride, which I think is amazing. You know, he's got the knack. And I don't know how he does it, if it's more zen, you know, him just talking and getting people back to their roots. But he's got this certain knack about him where he can pull out the best in people. And I think he does that usually by just relating. Even Neil Diamond, Neil Diamond was like, I don't play guitar anymore. And Rick was like, yes, you do. And he sat him down. He got him to play guitar again and start writing songs on guitar again. And he got a great record. Maybe two great. I can't remember. There were two. I think he got two great records out of Neil Diamond. Yeah. So anyways.
Even with that, I mean, I've seen the Metallica footage for Death Magnetic. He has a team that's worked with him for years, so they know what he's looking for, you know. So like anyone else who's, you know, climbed the ladder and, you know, as you're saying, where their name or their stamp of approval means something, they're always pretty much surrounded by a great team that's helping them out or supporting them.
Yeah, I often wonder about the Metallica thing because it's like, Death Magnetic, and I know certain people had issues with the production. Eddie Trunk was one of them. I actually didn't. You know, The Day That Never Comes, you know, has that peaking where it sounds distorted. But in a way, it's kind of, you know, I mean, it was digital distortion as opposed to like a band like Spell who gets like more analog sounding distortion. But in a way, the way specifically that song, The Day That Never Comes, was produced with that digital peaking. It's kind of rock and roll, you know. It's like, you know, what was it purposely left in there to kind of have that sloppy vibe, or was it something that took place in the mastering, as I believe certain people have suggested, like I think Eddie Trunk was suggesting that. Or, you know, I don't know. Or was it a mistake? Was it on purpose? Who knows? Who knows? And wasn't there a version of it that was corrected then?
Yeah, they had the whole guitar.
For video game, right. Yeah.
And it was mixed differently so that it wouldn't supposedly blow TV speakers. And people apparently ripped that and started posting it online. And a lot of people have said that that's better than... you know, what was released. I mean, I've never checked it out. I'm actually listened to that album in its entirety yesterday.
Did you? Yeah, it's a good record. I mean, I often wonder, like, what songs Rick really had his hand in. Because to me, The Day That Never Comes is very much a throwback to the classic Master of Puppets Metallica sound, where there's other songs on the record that almost sound like they could have been from the Load era, you know, which right. A lot of people, which in a way is also classic Metallica. It's just the classic Metallica sound that most people don't like as much as the Master of Puppets classic Metallica sound.
Right.
Part of me wishes that record, Death Magnetic, would have been just strictly an 80s Metallica sound. That was my one kind of disappointment with it, but it's a solid record through and through. It's a good record.
Yeah, I agree. I have no complaints with it. I think similar to Kiss or Black Sabbath or Maiden, the bigger the band, the larger the amount of haters you have as well. So I think you're going to have more people complaining about an album from a band as huge as Metallica. So I don't know. I thought it was good.
Yeah, it's good stuff. And again, Rick Rubin, for me, whether it's Slayer, Metallica, Lana Del Rey, the Dixie Chicks, you know, the Beastie Boys, everything the guy touches is usually pretty good in my book. Listen, it's no secret. I like all types of music. And, you know, even the Jay-Z stuff he did I thought was great. So there you go. I wanted to talk to you, Victor, as a fellow podcaster, and also to some of the other podcasters who might be listening out there. I recently spoke with a lawyer whose grandson is like best friends with my youngest son, my 3-year-old. They play together. And this lawyer, he's not from New Jersey. He was in town visiting. And he's a music business lawyer. I don't want to mention his name exactly, but this guy is big, big, big time. And he represents recording artists, and he's filed suits against LimeWire and other servers that provide illegal downloads of music. And he's got hundreds of millions of dollars for recording artists. This guy is the real deal. He's absolutely big time. I wish I could tell you what he actually does, but I'm not going to. But anyways, we got talking, and I'm like, well, I'm a podcaster, and we got talking about the very taboo subject of playing music on podcasts. And like, for example, Mitch LaFon, he wants no music on his podcast. He's terrified of music on the podcast, which I don't blame him. You know, iHeartRadio is not going to play your podcast if you have music on it, you know, so... I think it's smart, and Mitch's interviews are good. Maybe he doesn't need the music. However, a lot of us music podcasts play music, and there's this thought, well, if I only play 15 seconds of it, or I only play a minute of it, I'm not going to get sued, and I'm not breaking the law. And basically, this lawyer confirmed to me, you are absolutely breaking the law. Even if you play 3 seconds of it, if you play any audio that isn't yours on a podcast, you are breaking the law. This isn't the public airwaves. Podcasts are downloadable things. So if you play, you know, a news reporter that you taped off a TV talking about something on your podcast, that's not free and clear. That's you're not, even if you're providing commentary on it or whatever, you have a song and you talk over the song, what you're doing is 100% illegal. However, the interesting part of it, and it's depressing because we all love playing music on our podcast. And I said, well, like, for example, on an upcoming podcast on Talking Metal, I'm going to play 90 seconds of the new Judas Priest song. I cleared this with Judas Priest's publicist, who I assume cleared it with Sony. I don't know. But even that, like an email from the publicist, you know, this lawyer guy told me, he was like, well, hold on to those emails. If anything ever happens, it's good that you have them. But the lawyer told me that it's still, unless you have a big sign off from who owns the sound recording rights and you've gone through publishing and all this, it's still basically illegal. But, you know, it would get thrown out of court if you had an email from Judas Priest's publicist saying, please play it, you know. So it's kind of depressing. The good news is he said, no one's going to come after you. He's like, yeah, maybe talk over the beginning of it. You know, if you play this full song, he's like, don't worry about it. He's like, no one is going to come after you. The musicians love that people love their music. And unless you're talking shit about the music, unless you're playing songs that are unreleased and, you know, haven't been released yet, and unless you're doing something that is not in the artist's best interest, no one's going to come after you. If you're have a podcast about how stupid some rock star is, and then you play some of his music and he gets wind of it, he might come after you, you know, and he could get you in trouble. But basically, if you're just out there promoting the music and you're a music lover, you're not going to be targeted. You will not be targeted. If you're playing unreleased Guns N' Roses tracks, yeah, you're going to get targeted and you're going to probably get bombarded with legal letters and, you know, you're going to get in trouble. If you're playing an unreleased Kanye West song, yeah, you're going to get in trouble. But if you're playing some, you know, new song by Winger, Kip Winger is freaking excited you're playing that new song. He wants people to hear that song. Encourage your listeners to go buy the song, you know, support these guys, you know, and no one, if you played the new Kip Winger and you're like, Kip Winger fucking sucks, listen how shitty this is, and he gets wind of it, yeah, then you risk getting in trouble with him or whoever, or, you know, your podcast, you know, iTunes or whoever, you know. But the bottom line is this guy really actually put me at ease that, you know, these artists, especially the smaller ones, love it when you hype their music, when you talk about how good their music is, how you hype and help sell their music. But you just have to be careful, and it always is good to try to clear the stuff if you can. And even if it's not an official clearing, you know, just an email from the publicist or an email from Kip Winger saying, yeah, please play the new song, you know. You know, so that's the bottom line. You know, let's just keep doing what we're doing, guys. And I'm all for, after talking with this lawyer, if you're one of these podcasters, like you do this a lot, Victor, where you don't play the whole song, play the fucking whole song, man. Talk over it a little bit. Talk over the intro, you know. Because I actually, you know, when I hear Decibel Geek and they like fade the song out after like 30 seconds or something, it drives me nuts a little bit. It's like, I personally want to hear the whole song play out. Although there's a flip side, I've had people complain, like, why do you play music? Well, we only want to hear you talk, you know. So, you know, I like hearing the talk and the music.
I have some unreleased Captain T material. Do you think that...
You'll get totally sued for that. No, I want to play some unreleased Captain T was my stage name when I used to play music more frequently than I do now. Played toured up and down the East Coast, played in New York hundreds of times. But I have some unreleased music that I need to actually post to YouTube or out there, get out there somewhere, because as we all know, John has written some songs on the new Ace record, and I do believe that some of the riffs are leftover tracks from Captain T and Astronomy's band, Roy's Baby, from like the early 90s, and part of me just wants to put them out there somewhere. Maybe I'll play them on a podcast. I'm not looking to tick John off. I'm not looking to tick Ace off, because John has assured me anything that he's, you know, given Ace to work with were riffs he created, even if maybe at one point they were a part of a song we wrote together. And I'm totally cool with it. It's awesome. I think it's amazing that John's writing a track or two on the new Ace record. But part of me just wants to at least have the stuff out there. Maybe I'll play him on Talking Rock. You know, that's what I'll do. I'll put together a Talking Rock podcast just so it's out there. No one listens to that show anyway, so I just want it to be out there.
So if all of a sudden you hear something that sounds like Moongate, but the song is called Space Invader all of a sudden.
Yeah. I don't think he gave him Moongate, but there's another song that John and I wrote, which was a Kiss knockoff, called The Man, which we wanted to sound, we wrote it to sound like a Gene Simmons song, you know, from like Love Gun era. I mean, it sounds a lot like Plaster Caster or Almost Human. It's got I think we stole some of the melodies from that, and it's never really been released. It's absolutely never been released. Called The Man, it's a great song. It was out of time, you know. We kind of wrote it in the 90s, and it had more of that 70s and 80s hard rock feel than the rest of our songs, which still had a 70s and 80s feel, but they also kind of had that grungy influence on them, whereas this song sounds like it's straight out of, like, you know, 1981 or even earlier than that, like the 70s. And I have a feeling from what John's told me that those are the riffs from this one song, which we quite frankly ripped off from Kiss, are the riffs that are going to end up on this song on Ace's record. I hope the song ends up on the record. Of course, Ace's record isn't out yet, so we don't know officially what songs are on the record, but it sounds like it's going to end up on the record.
That's funny. I mean, obviously, my recording has never reached the level of your quality or what you've worked with, but, I mean, similar, I've done a Kiss or Ace type knockoff song, and it's funny going up to friends and saying, hey, I want an Ace type solo, or I want a Gene type bass line on here, and then what they return to you being something completely different to what you're asking for, and thinking, okay, are you really a fan of Kiss?
Oh, you got to hear this song. I'll play it for you. It sounds like Kiss. This song John and I wrote, and John wrote all the music for it. When I say music, I mean guitar and drums and bass. I came up with the vocal melodies, and I believe my brother and I wrote the lyrics. So I'll send it to you. It's got to be from like 93, 94. And I'll also play it on an upcoming episode of Talking Rock, which is part of the Talking Metal Digital Podcasting Network. All right, guys, I got to wrap it up.
Excellent. Anything else that you want to bring up?
I got a complaint that the last couple episodes of Talking Metal were too short, and somebody said dialed in or something, or I was phoning them in. I don't know what that's supposed to mean. But, yeah, guys, I've been... Again, I'm at this job now where I can't really get on the internet at work, or I risk getting in trouble, and I can't be editing podcasts at work, or I risk getting in trouble. So that's one reason. And another reason is I've been freaking doing a lot of stuff with Mitch. Even when I'm not on his podcast as the co-host, I am working behind the scenes on his podcast, and his podcast is great. check it out. It's One on One with Mitch LaFon. It's part of the Talking Metal Digital Network. It is on iTunes. We also have Talking Metal Digital Feed, which is also on iTunes, where you get a selection of our Talking Metal Digital Podcasting Network podcasts. What else? Please support me with Amazon. I just got a nice check from Amazon, thanks to you guys who go to talkingmetal.com and click on the Amazon link that is in the show notes, and you used that to open your Amazon, and then you made your purchases, and I got a little money back from that. Quite a bit of money, actually. Not bad. So I really appreciate you guys doing that, and please continue to do it. Somewhere, someone right now is about to go on Amazon and buy something. So all I ask you to do is just go to talkingmetal.com, use that link to open up your Amazon, and go ahead and make your purchases. There's no extra cost or anything like that. I also want you to support Victor. Give Victor a PayPal donation. That's my challenge to you. Send him a couple bucks. Go to marsattacksradio.com. You got the PayPal donation button up there, right, Victor?
Yes, sir. Right on the right-hand side of the page there.
Yeah, and good job on the shows you did with Mitch, too. That one episode, the Stephen Piercy one, just, like I said, the streams and downloads on that were out of this world.
Cool. It's a lot of fun to talk to Mitch, and I was actually lucky there was a hockey game that night. If not, we would have been talking for about 6 hours, which is usually the norm with us. So.
Right, right. Cool. And let's just take a quick look at Facebook before we go. We have a couple pages on Facebook. There's a Talking Metal page. There's a Talking Metal Digital page, which I actually tried to combine those pages, and they wouldn't let me. And there's a Mars Attacks page. There's a One-on-One page. So go like all of those. Let me see if anybody's checked in on Facebook before we go. Yeah, James has checked in. 44 here, and I'm come out if they... Oh, okay. James says he's going to go check Spell out. He's 44, just like me. And he's in Calgary, so that's cool. Cool, James. And Sarah says that Andrew Watt is the guitarist in California Breed. Sarah, thanks for listening. Andrew Watt, he's a young guy, right, Victor?
Yeah, yes, he is. I believe he's only like 20 or so.
Yeah, I heard that too. So that's great. Really looking forward to listening more to California Breed with Glenn Hughes and, of course, Jason Bonham. And I don't know. There are a couple other people checking in on Twitter. I don't have my Twitter page opened anymore. But thanks, guys, for listening. We appreciate your support. And, yeah, we'll catch you next time.
Absolutely. We're going to leave things off here with Mastodon's latest single. Name of the track is High Road, sort of to wet our whistles here before the pending new album. And I don't know what happened. Record Store Day used to just be for the mom and pop stores. Now it seems as if iTunes getting their cut as well. So,
right.
Here we go. A little Mastodon with High Road. Catch you next time right here on Talking Metal Live. We'll be right back.
Look around. You can find cars like these on AutoTrader. New cars, used cars, electric cars, maybe even flying cars. Okay, no flying cars, but as soon as they get invented, they'll be on AutoTrader. Just you wait. AutoTrader.
You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.